Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Chairs. My name is Fernando Arencibia Jr., and with me, as always, is the ever smooth operator, Jennifer Wollman. Hi, Jennifer. Say hi.
Hi. Now, you know I'm going to have that song stuck in my head all day. He always loves sticking songs in my head that go in like a little bow weevil in my brain for the rest of the day.
I love it. All right, so what do we got in store for today? I know we're going to have some conversations about some things that are very technical but are very important to property owners in the state of Florida. And we're going to do an update on Great American Realtor Days.
Right. Today is a little bit of a mishmash, but believe it or not, they are related. They are connected because we love connecting the dots. But yeah, what we're going to discuss today, first of all, is what's called the look back period and the 50% rule. And that those two words or two phrases relate to FEMA and flood insurance, specifically the National Flood Insurance Program, which is managed by FEMA. And the reason we thought it was so important is because I think flood insurance is something that's often overlooked when you're doing your due diligence on any real estate, but especially on commercial real estate. If you have any type of federal loan, such as, you know, obviously Fannie Freddie or some of the other loans that are government related, you are required to have flood insurance, and flood insurance is not covered in most commercial policies. So I thought it was important. I didn't know the extent of how much this can affect a property until we heard from Cindy Hayden, who is our Florida Realtors guru on everything flood related, both just from a policy standpoint and from personal experience. So yeah, that's why I thought we'd bring it up. Basically, super, super basic info. The National Flood Insurance Program, affectionately known as NFIP, is managed by FEMA and is delivered through a network of more than 50 insurance companies. And it's all based on the flood maps. And the flood maps are worked on with local communities. And we are going to include the information on our show notes. But basically, there are very few communities who don't participate in this. You know, FEMA loves to say, and we like to say, that floods can happen anywhere, even in areas not prone to flooding. And just 1 inch of flood water can cause up to $25,000 in damage. So especially what we witnessed last year with, you know, two big storms that swept through the country, not just through Florida, right, but hit several states in the southeast, flooding in areas that were not in historical flood zones flooded. Yeah. Here we go. So let's start with, what do you want to start with, the look back period or the 50% rule? They're both related.
I think they are both related. And I think what's important here is that this is an issue that is a bit complex, right? There is a way to understand the ramification that it has. So I think that it's difficult to talk about one without talking about the other because of how related the look back period is to the 50% rule. So you want to break it down as an example?
The look back period basically states that if there is a flood claim on your property, they're going to look back, the insurance company FEMA is going to look back X number of years to see how much the building has been improved. And I believe in the state of Florida, the look back period is 3 years, correct?
No, well, it depends on the county. So in some cases, you have a 4 year, 3 years. So it really depends on.
Okay. So it's very county specific. So again, we're trying to give you a general, we're not experts on this. We're just trying to give you general information so that you can look into it during your due diligence period, or if you don't have flood insurance, so you can contact your insurer and get flood insurance. But anyway, the look back period basically states that if there's a flood in your area and you have improved the property over 50% over the last whatever time frame your county has, then you're going to have to rebuild the property according to new flood compliance guidelines, to new code,
to the new code. Building code of the municipality.
So that, you know, one of the things that Florida Realtors is looking at, and this is where it connects, and where we will get into it a little bit further during your discussion on GUARD, is that let's say you have a property that you've had for a while and you decided to update it. So you've put in impact resistant windows, you've put on a new roof, and this is over the last X number of years, and all of a sudden you have a flood incident. If they look at those improvements and they go backwards, they consider those improvements that you made to strengthen and make your property more resilient. They include that in the 50%. So what Florida Realtors is trying to do is to have the look back period.
Right, it reduced to 1 year.
Correct.
So if I may.
And tap the limits, right?
Right, exactly. So imagine that you're buying a house that was built in 1975 and you buy it this year. And 3 years ago, there was a storm that went through the property, and the property owner at the time got flood insurance, proceeds money to be able to fix the home. Let's say that the value of the home without the land is $200,000 let's say $300,000, right? So now let's say that the property owner used $80,000 to, you know, that was the total cost of basically fixing up the home after the hurricane that happened 3 years before you bought the property. Now you buy the property this year, God forbid, and then there's a storm that comes in, right? So I told you the property is worth $300,000, all right, on paper, without the land. You have storm damage. You go back to your flood insurance to get insurance to be able to fix your property. And now they're telling you that the cost of fixing the property is going to be another $80,000. So the look back period says, well, it doesn't matter who owns the property. What has happened to the property over the last 4 years? Well, 3 years ago, before you bought the property owner spent $80,000. Now that you bought the property, you're still in that 4 year period and you're going to spend another $80,000. Well, the combination of those two, $80 + $80 is $160,000. If the property value is $300,000, $160,000 exceeds the 50% rule threshold. So now what they're telling you is you got to now rebuild this house that was built in 1975. You know, for all intents and purposes, it's a very good house, strong bones. It will keep, right? All you're doing is trying to fix the damage, right? Which probably did not structurally damage the property, but it's just the normal damages that are incurred when you have flooding during a storm. Right. But now because you broke that 50% rule, they're telling you that now you have to rebuild that house to 2025 building codes. Right. Which can be prohibitively expensive. And most property owners don't even know that this rule exists. They get flood insurance. They're in a flood zone. They get flood insurance. They're thinking that they're covered and they are unaware that this rule is preventing them from, you know, may prevent them from rebuilding. you know? And in some cases, and this is an example that, you know, Cindy Hayden, who is our Florida Realtor Secretary this year, and now it's uncontested for treasurer next year, Cindy has brought up this issue to the point that she had a property owner, client of hers, that was trying to pull a permit to put a new AC in her home, and that was going to also trigger an issue. Just the new AC was going to trigger a problem because of the 50% rule and the lookback period. So the proposal that the legislature is evaluating is, well, why don't we reduce that lookback period to a more manageable time? What has happened over the last year, right? So that we prevent some of these unintended consequences of having this rule.
And they're also considering caps so that it's limited to substantial damage and substantial improvements. So one of the concerns that we discussed is that you want to make sure that one law or one rule or one policy, in this case, the 50% and the look back period, isn't conflicting with the other incentives that are being done on a national level and on a local and state level to make properties more resilient and more sustainable, right? Yeah. So the fact that the look back period and the improvements include things that are not storm related at all,
right?
Are being considered improvements for the purpose of the flood insurance.
Absolutely.
So what we want to let you know here is just to make everybody aware of it, whether you're a homeowner, a business owner, or property owner, right, a commercial property owner, is that during your due diligence, ask if there has been a flood claim, right? You need to do your research and see if there have been any flood claims. Find out what the total costs of improvements that have been done to the property are over the look back period, and have your insurance person look into that and make sure that you have a flood policy.
Right. No, absolutely. Very important. I would also say that these are the little intricate, items that affect, you know, the cost of homeownership that people that are in the industry are always looking into, right? Because what happens is when any one of our consumers runs into an issue like that, they usually come to us to ask, have you heard of this before? What's been going on? So sometimes when you begin to see how it is affecting, you know, people, then it basically becomes an issue that perhaps needs to be addressed through a legislative or advocacy pathway.
Right. And I want to read something because this is actually from the Florida Realtors legislative priorities. And what they wrote is significant. And I think for the rationale as to why we support this. And so the legislative priority title is Limit NFIP Lookback Periods for Substantial Damage and Improvements. And then the wording that they wrote is as follows. Local government adoption of National Flood Insurance Program lookback periods are little known or understood by the public, but in some instances, lookback periods can prevent homeowners, and its property owners in general, from repairing or improving their homes unless the entire structure is brought into full compliance with current flood regulations and may include elevating the structure.
Right.
Lookback periods can lead to modest flood insurance premium discounts for policyholders, but they're also linked to decreases in property values. They said home values, but I put in property. Longer lookback periods can also reduce the likelihood of renovations and efforts to harden homes/properties to withstand wind damage. So again, that their whole rationale is that, okay, it sounds good in theory, but the effect can have a negative impact in the sense that it's going to make properties less resilient to storms and flooding overall.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, there's a lot of intricacies into the rule. We just kind of gave you the, you know, bird's eye view so that you have, you know, just an understanding of what it is. Definitely encourage you to follow Cindy Hayden. You know, she She, in her social media, does a lot of videos because she, unfortunately, has had to go through this twice. Right, you know, she, both her home was hit, you know, in two back-to-back storms. And basically, you know, I think less than a year after renovating her home, she had to do it all over again, you know, and she's learned a lot and she's shared a lot of this information. So, you know, I think if you guys are interested, you will find it, you will find it valuable. And that brings us to why this is one of the many reasons why we visit Tallahassee every year. And by we, I mean realtors throughout Florida, through the work of Florida Realtors, get together every year during legislative session. Legislative session of Florida is 60 days. So we usually go early in session, you know, within the first 3 weeks or so. And you have hundreds of realtors, over 1,000 realtors that come into Tallahassee. And we have meetings for 2 days with state legislators and the governor's office. And we do this in advancement of all the issues that we see that consumers that we help day in and day out face in our marketplace.
So what are some of our legislative priorities, or what was some of the sentiment that you saw when you were up there? Because we went up early this year because session ends May 2nd, right? You guys,
I think we were there day second of, you know, the second day of session. You know, we were there, which is great. Everybody is very energized. Everybody is, you know, ready to get to work. Everybody is very busy. 60 days seems like a long time, but it really isn't. There's so much work to be done. And just so you know, there are thousands of bills that get filed every year. Not all of them make it. We're right in the middle of session when we're recording this episode. By the time this episode airs, we're going to be about 2 weeks away from session being over. This midway of session, you know, the start of week five is really when a lot of bills, you know, begin to die down. So when you get there at the beginning, it's great because you get to, you know, express your concerns about the look back period, the 50% rule, and all of those things that are important. One of the things that, you know, is really interesting is that the state is very, very interested in, you know, trimming down their budget. They want to make sure that they are fiscally responsible. That was a big part of the conversation. Obviously, insurance becomes a big part of the conversation year in, year out. Now that we are a few years removed from the tort reform that was enacted a couple of years back, two or three years back, we're starting to see and monitor how that has affected the insurance market. We're seeing insurers come back into the state, and the legislature is very interested in making sure that those changes are actually, you know, helping the bottom line of consumers, both on residential and commercial properties. You know, even though there are distinct differences, it affects both the commercial property owner and the single family homeowner as well. Condos is at the top of everybody's conversation, just based on all the changes that were prescribed after the tragic collapse of Surfside Towers. And so, you know, conversations abound about, you know, how to enact and enforce all of the changes that were prescribed to the condos. You know, we always advocate to have more transparency, so that consumers really have all the right information about condominiums and about the entities that are running the governance of these condo associations. And the Live Local Act, which has been very successful, and, you know, it was one of the most, you know, ambitious programs in regards to affordable housing and so many things that are packed into it. Year over year, there are usually tweaks that have been made to it. And in this year, we also see some of that, you know, come into play. One thing that has to do with home affordability is I have always been told by people that focus all of their attention on home affordability that there is no magic pill, that it's going to require multiple venues in order to address home affordability. And one of them is to allow for, you know, the building of ADUs, which, you know, we have in some municipalities like Miami-Dade County.
Accessory dwelling units.
Exactly. Accessory dwelling units.
Also so known as granny flats.
There you go. There you go. Exactly.
Got it, demystified.
Exactly. Although I do have to say, it's more and more looking like those granny flats might be the kids' flats.
Yes.
Because, you know, of so many things that is happening in our society overall and the affordable, you know, concern. But that's definitely one of the things that are in there. So if you want, I could go through some of the bills that are making their way through the House and the Senate, but I don't know how interesting that
would
be.
No, just mostly I think the Live Local Act, which I know is being looked at on a national level. Linda Julian was just at some kind of affordable housing symposium or League of Cities in Texas, and they were she saw a panel and they were discussing the Florida Live Local Act as something that maybe Texas wants to adopt. So this is something that is being looked at on the national level. So maybe you can discuss that tweak. Sure. And then I know there was a commercial squatters law and obviously the business rent tax. So
I'll start with the commercial squatters law. You know, there was a residential squatters law that was passed last year, and it was thought that, you know, the commercial property owners were kind of, you know, left behind when it comes to that issue. This was a bill that was sponsored by our very own Senator Ana Maria Rodriguez from District 40. And basically, it mimics the same statute that was passed last year into this year so that you would have a pathway to remove a squatter from a commercial property. That has made its way and has passed. So, you know.
Now it just needs the governor's signature.
It just needs the governor's signature. So that definitely is in the win column.
Yeah, I had a deal a while back that was kind of scary. It was a bookstore and on 8th Street. So it was a bookstore, but there was a house. So there was a separate single family house. And I went to show it one day and I opened the door and there were a ton of people living in the house.
Wow.
And they were siphoning water and electricity from the hotel next door. This was an estate deal. And one, you know, they ran out, like, what are you doing here? Two, the place was a health hazard, obviously.
Right.
And then every time I went, so we had to go, we had to get a no trespassing sign. Every time I went, we had to get locks changed all the time. And I always had to contact the sheriff or the police department to escort us because showings were a nightmare. And it's not really an event. Eviction process, right? Because there's no lease, there's no anything, and no matter what you do to protect the property, they kept getting in, so this law would have come in handy,
for sure. No, definitely an important bill and an important statute that, you know, hopefully we'll get the governor's signature soon. There were multiple bills that have to do with changes to the Live Local Act. I think the one that looks to be making its headway, it still has to go through a couple more committees, but it looks like, you know, there is the intent of moving it forward, has to do with changes to the or expanding the land use mandate for affordable housing to sites owned by religious institutions. And so, you know, that way church lands and, you know, religious institutions that own land can also be a part of developing affordable housing in their land, and also for planned unit developments. So if you had a PUD, a planned unit development, that maybe you wanted to rebuild, that would allow for the utilization of the guidelines that are in the Live Local Act into these planned unit developments. It also will mandate local governments to allow accessory dwelling units in all areas that are zoned for single family residential use, and will prohibit local governments from enacting what they call, what some of them would call a building moratoria, or a zoning in progress, you know, kind of approach, which is a way for municipalities to kind of delay making, you know, allowing for construction, just to say we have a moratorium on building. Part of the affordable housing issue that we have was started, you know, 13 years ago when we stopped building, you know, as a result of the housing crisis. And so we are very far behind. So now it's not the time to slow down construction. We need to increase the number of units. And then definitely on the business rent tax, there is great, desire by the legislature to just get rid of the business rent tax completely. The likelihood is that, you know, that we're going to see maybe a, for them to cut it another 50% from where it is today. So from the 2% statewide to go to 1%, with the idea that that perhaps next year we'll see the full elimination of the state business rent tax. Now, remember, some municipalities have an add-on to that tax, which is, you know, 1% in Miami-Dade County. You know, Broward has one, but that has to be advocated at a local level, right? But at a state level, you know, we've done a huge heavy lift. It went from 6% to 2%. That took over a decade to make that happen. And now we are getting very close to the point where this could, you know, perhaps in the future, in the very near future, stop being a talking point at a state level.
Yeah, which would be really nice because we're the only state in the country that has a tax on commercial leases. So that would be nice. Absolutely. Yeah. And in terms of the Live Local Act there, you know, we've been seeing now that there are more and more projects planned. So I know there's one that was proposed by Keystone Holdings for doing a project in the Blue Lagoon area, which I know you've done some work with office space there. I think that's a great area for multifamily. And, you know, there's a lot of conversations nowadays about how the vacancy rates are up and the rents are getting lower. There's a push, you know, some push down on the rental rates. But the reality is that also slows building, and between the cost of land and the cost of construction, it's not going to take too long for us to be behind again. We're already behind total number of units on a nationwide level. So having more of these plans in the pipeline is helpful to bringing the rents down.
Absolutely. And I do want to just kind of say that, to me, when you're looking at all of these changes, if you have ever interacted with the Apple Music program, sometimes you'll put the name of an artist, especially an established artist, and they have a playlist called Essentials. So basically, these are all of the top hits. These are the ones that they're more familiar with. But then there are usually two other sets, and one cuts is called Deep Cuts, and then the other one is called Inspired By. So Deep Cuts is basically other songs in their catalog that are maybe not as popular at the time, but, you know, it just lets you to go a little deeper. For me, as an agent and as a broker, if you're a practitioner, if you're an investor, more specifically, right, you look at, okay, so I can understand the market. I'm looking at a property. I understand the cap rate. I understand the cost. What is the capital expense that I would have to do? You know, I evaluate that. Maybe I know a little bit about the area, what's happening in the area. But now when you begin to see, well, what are the laws, both at a local municipal level, at a state level, and at a federal level, that are affecting my business, and maybe changes that are coming down that maybe might change the way that I look at this parcel of land, the way that I look at this property, to me, that's Deep Cuts.
That's when you see the edge.
Right. And that's like another tier of your profession. And whether you are an investor that is a professional investor, or if you are a commercial broker, this is now another tier, another level. So that's why I think it's important. I do want to also say that, you know, one of the last things that we heard was, for those of you who have maybe not used this, my Safe Florida Home program, which is to help you fortify your home, since we've spoken about the look back period, the 50% rule has to do with the property. There are monies in this program that are available for you to fortify your homes, you know, impact windows, impact doors, things of that nature. And it was announced that there is $103 million that are going to be released into this program. This is an extremely successful program. Every year it gets used up. People, you know, thousands of applications come in. And on April 30th, so at the end of this month, you're going to see $103 million are going to be released. So I would say Google My Safe Florida Home Program online so that you can get, you know, you could see access to that program. It is very good. The data indicates there are about 10,000 homeowners who have completed the program. Over 30,000 inspected homes where the homeowner has not completed the questionnaire, but, you know, but they're in the middle of working. So it's been a very successful program. So I just wanted to, you know, throw that in there for all Floridians.
All right. Anything else with GUARD or?
No, I mean, it's always great to go. I think you know, people would be surprised as to how conversational the meetings are and how, I wouldn't say the word informal, I'd just say how great the interactions are between the legislators and the practitioners that go and basically share the information. And the questions that most of them ask are very good questions. They want to get feedback from us. They want to get feedback from what are you hearing from your consumers, especially when it is that has to do with certain laws that were implemented, you know, statutes that were passed maybe 2-3 years ago and how they're affecting. Kudos to a lot of them that are addressing this condo issue, which is a significant condo issue in South Florida specifically. But, you know, really it affects all of Florida, but more specifically South Florida, because that's where the bulk of the condo inventory in the state of Florida is. And, you know, I would just say it's a great experience. It's great to get involved. You learn so much, and really we always aim to bring back as much value as we can to our customers by remaining engaged and just, you know, gathering this information and being able to share it. We have an agent who it's looking at this parcel for a client. We're evaluating it together. It's 55 acres. It's a PUD, it's a planned unit development. And it's really interesting how, knowing that this bill is coming down the pipe, and you know, all credits to him for being aware, well, this is happening, how would that affect the valuation of this property and of the value of the land? And so now we're monitoring what is happening there to see what, if any, application it will have, how it would change the valuation of the land. So and that's where you really, as a broker, have the opportunity to add the most value, because those are things that his client was not aware that was even in the pipeline, that is even a possibility.
Right.
So,
right. And that was, he was looking at applying the Live Local. And I just want to give a shout out. You were saying regarding the condo issue to our local legislators, Jason Pizzo and Vicky Lopez, who have really been spearheading their opposite sides of the aisles. One's a Democrat, one's a Republican, but they've come together on this issue. Yeah. And again, the Florida realtors, we consider ourselves purple. We're not blue or red. We're all about the housing and the environment and how it affects private property rights and living, working, and investing in Florida. So I want to give them a shout out. And then finally, you almost ruined my fun fact, but you didn't, because you didn't quite nail it, but you were close. I'm impressed. So according to LegiScan, which is a legislative bill tracker, there are 36 pages of bills currently being considered by the Florida legislature. I didn't count the number of bills on each page because I do have a life most of the time.
Yeah.
But I did count the number of bills on page 36, and there were 29. So if you do the math, that's 1,044 bills being considered by the legislature.
Yeah. And
their only job is to do one thing, and that's to pass a balanced budget.
Right.
So that's a lot of bills. And I just want to give a huge, huge shout out to our Florida Realtors advocacy team. They do an amazing job keeping track of all of the bills and seeing which ones affect any of our priorities, or if it isn't in our priorities, if it's something that should be. So huge, huge shout out to them.
And Jennifer, I think we should put in the resource that we have for the podcast, we should put, and you could Google it, just Google Florida Bill Tracker, and you could go to the site, and you can track any bill and see where it is. You can read the full language of the bill. You can read a summary. You could read any amendments that have been proposed. You know, all of that is based on sunshine laws. Everything is out in the light. So you'll be able to track every single bill and what's happening and what's been down to the minute.
Right.
They're very, very good about that stuff. So, all right, guys, thank you again for joining us on another episode of Between Two Chairs. We appreciate you listening in and pulling up a chair. And until the next one, we are out of here. Smooth operator.
Do, do, do.
Smooth operator. Bye.
Bye.